passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from South Buffalo, where I gave myself just enough time to maybe make this live in-person broadcast happen. Long-time listeners may remember when we did this. We did this once before in person.
Yes.
But wow, this was a production. I've been working nonstop for the last hour. We've moved things around in this room here. Golo got a new microphone. So I decided to come over here and set it up and play with a lot of other audio contraptions that I've acquired recently. And here's my co-host, Chris Golo, to tell you what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so we actually have a very packed show today. We're going to talk about AEW pay-per-view buys. We're a week since Revolution, so we'll kind of touch on that and compare it to previous pay-per-views. We're also going to discuss WWE 2K22 that came out this past week. We got some streaming rights deals for baseball that we're going to discuss, as well as we got compensatory agreements for Nikon and Vince McMahon.
They got raises. That's right.
Well, we'll get right into AEW pay-per-views, as we have an estimation as far as Revolution that happened, like I said, March 6, 2022, and we're estimating about 146,000 to 170,000 pay-per-view buys.
Yes, that's according to Dave Meltzer. I did ask about that too, and that looks like the number of pay-per-view buys. That I was told that is accurate. That would put it, you can see over my right shoulder, the massive All Out number that All Out did. The first pay-per-view with CM Punk, the pay-per-view where Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole were not advertised, but they debuted. That's the record with about 205,000 buys. This one looks to have done at least just over what Full Gear did in November. AEW pay-per-views have been up year over year, and this continues that streak. Double or Nothing is coming up next. Ticket sales are strong. Double or Nothing will have to be more than 115,000 buys to keep that year-over-year increase streak going. This one did between 146 and 170. The median of that is what?
Well, I mean, it's...
Yeah, pop quiz.
It's an increase, like you said, from Revolution before, but it beat Full Gear from the last pay-per-view.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's a constant increase of business, like I said, other than that anomaly of the CM Punk in-ring return on All Out.
Yes. So, the median of 146 and 170 is what?
Oh. Well, you ask it in such a scientific way. That would be... About 158
exactly.
Yeah.
158. So, I think Double or Nothing will be up year over year. That sounds pretty achievable. It'd be disappointing if Double or Nothing was only at 115 this year and was only equal to what it did last year. I think that would be a disappointment. So I think they can do that in May, beat that number up year over year again. When it's time for All Out 2022, though, I think they'll have a lot of trouble beating All Out 2021, doing more than 205,000 buys. I doubt it. that pay-per-view was special in the sense that this was CM Punk's first match in, 7 years. Unless somebody catches fire or they have some new attraction to offer, which I can't even imagine what they could possibly offer that would be on the scale of CM Punk's first match in 7 years. I don't think that All Out is going to continue that streak come Labor Day weekend. And I know there'll be the good chance there'll be a UK stadium show for WWE pay-per-view, premium live event at that time. I don't know that that's going to have a huge effect, but that's on the horizon for Labor Day weekend this year. Do I have anything else here? We're really at an unusual situation here. So if we look at, what do I have here? The breakdown of, this is the breakdown for the ticket sales. So it did about $620,000 for a live gate. If you assume that about 95% of the tickets distributed reported by WrestleTix, which is 8,700, about 95,000 of that was paid, assume a $75 ticket price, that gets us to $620,000. So something in that range, something in that ballpark. Venue merch at figure about $15 per head off of, you know, something like just under 8,700 paid ticket sales. That accounts for an extra roughly $125,000 in venue merch. If you do the math, you get to, I don't know if I have it on here, but you get to something that's like the second most lucrative AEW event, short of All Out 2021, which had, you know, pay-per-view is the biggest component of a pay-per-view event. Much more than ticket sales are, because this is a media business, not a live event business.
The Edition Financial Arena in Orlando, that is actually the University of Central Florida, I believe. You know, a college basketball arena.
Yeah.
When does it get to a point where, I mean, we've seen that they can sell out bigger arenas, NHL, NBA size arenas. Shouldn't they at least be doing these big four pay-per-views at those type of arenas?
You would think. I mean, they're doing a Double or Nothing at T-Mobile Arena.
Yes.
That seems appropriate. Why was this not at the Amway Center? I don't know. Does W have a lock on the Amway Center? Does W have a lock on some venues? I don't know. Is that part of why W continues to run house shows at venues that can hold like 12,000 people, but they can only draw like 4,000 people to a house show? I don't know. I think, I don't know. Yeah, they could draw more ticket revenue here. They could, it looks like based on the news that this event is going to be $1 million. I'm talking about Double or Nothing is going to be $1 million gate, that they're increasing ticket prices somewhat. Because it's probably on par with the number of tickets they sold for other pay-per-views, right? But it'll probably be more appropriately priced. So I think it'll be more appropriately priced going forward. I don't think AEW should do a stadium show or anything just yet. But no,
but like All Out should probably be at what was the name of the arena that Punk debuted for Rampage?
United Center.
Yes. Yeah, United Center should be, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would be surprised, though. I bet it's not. I bet it's at, like, the Sears.
The Now Arena.
The Now Arena. Call, yeah. Yeah. We'll see, though. What else here?
So,
this is a well-received pay-per-view.
Yep.
According to the Cage Match ratings.
By the way, Cage Match, they have been on top of their stuff. I have gotten messages from people who work for Cage Match asking me about events that are coming up. Like, hey, do you have a match card listing and stuff like that?
Really?
They're doing in-depth research over there at Cage Match to really be prepared for this.
I've been scraping Cage Match constantly. I've went through a huge Python project and revamp this week as I've... I'm trying to do big things. I'm always talking about the Python things I'm doing. I feel like people see very little of it, but I'm gradually trying to figure out a system that will allow us to get a better idea of maybe who's a draw, maybe. But I was re-scraping the Cage Match data because previously I had scraped it only collecting wrestler IDs for wrestlers and had not included tag teams or stables, which have their own separate unique IDs, don't you know?
Which there's a lot of stables in AEW and a lot of tag teams.
That's true. There's thousands of stables. Anyway, the cage match rating. This was this is as of last night I grabbed this screenshot.
The 8.95, so it's lower than Full Gear,
yes,
and All Out, but higher than Double or Nothing 2021.
Right, right.
And much higher than last year's Revolution, which I imagine the explosion death match is what caused that.
Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that explosion really caused was that to happen. I remember that pay-per-view not being great otherwise, so it did not overcome the main event. So this would be what? Not the second most. All Out 2021 is the highest rated. And this is off of how many votes, right? Like, in this case, 331. The All Out event has 590 while being the highest rated. So this is just under 9. How many 9s are there? 1, 2...
It's 4th.
It's 4th. Yep. Okay.
Double or Nothing 2019, 9.11, sets second place after All Out 2021.
Right. So a well-received show, I would say, which is important. You know, Tony Khan did mention the Dynamite cage match ratings in the post-media scrum. He's following the Dynamite event cage match ratings.
The cage match is becoming more and more... a viable thing. We've been using it a lot here as you've been using the Python data, but I think it gauges, I don't know, I think the diehard wrestling fans are going there, so it's going to be your positive outlook. I mean, we can understand why 6.93 was Revolution 2021.
Yes. Because of the explosion.
The explosion, yes.
Or lack thereof. So, there's that. Moving on.
Yep, we're going to talk about WWE 2K22. Just came out this past week.
Have you played it?
I have not played it.
Do you own it? Are you going
I am
play
not
it?
A next gen system guy. I mean, I should, but when I'm prioritizing my financials, it's way down my list.
Do you have a system that could play this game?
I do not.
No, me neither. I've heard the reviews are good, though.
Yeah, well, my friends enjoy it.
Your friends?
Yes.
What do they say about it?
They say the story mode is not too bad. They say the GM mode's better than it was, mm-hmm. But they say the graphics and the real-life aspect of it look a lot better than the previous version.
I go to Metacritic.com for my video game reviews. I don't play video games, but I do when it comes to WWE games. Look at Metacritic.com. And there's, as of last night, 26 reviews of the PlayStation version. These aren't like rando fan reviews. These are all published, and when I say published, they're published on some website. So it's presumably somebody who knows what they're talking about when it comes to video games. And they've got I don't know if this is an average or a composite score, however they standardize these scores, of 76, which is marked as green. Anything over a 75 apparently is marked as green, so that's it's considered mostly positive. This is not in the 90s or anything like that. The PC game off of 4 reviews is a little bit lower at 73. The Xbox version off of 8 reviews is 77. So this appears to be a well-received game. Compare that to
2K2020.
Yes, which was rated what?
43 and 45, respectively, on 43 for PS4, 45 for Xbox.
So people hated that game.
Yes.
Battlegrounds, the arcade game, was the most recent 2K WWE release before this one. It had a 60. None of this means anything necessarily about sales, but presumably people do want to buy games that are good rather than games that suck. So when it comes to wrestling, wrestling product itself, though, might be something different. But...
That SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain, man. Still,
yes. What's the last wrestling video game that you played regularly?
Oh, it was probably SmackDown vs. Raw 2007 or 8, I think. Okay. I remember wherever ECW was a GM mode, because I would try to make ECW the top brand. But I think that would be like the last one.
Did you play Legends of Wrestling?
Yes, and I loved Legends of Wrestling.
Okay.
Especially the realistic, like the mob ran the New Jersey territory.
That sounds familiar. I don't think I owned it, but I played that. There's no Where's No Mercy on here?
This is all PlayStation going forward.
Who made this chart? This sucks.
But No Mercy's not. No Mercy is the most praised among the general consensus of the wrestling.
Why is No Mercy so loved? I that is the last video game, wrestling video game that I've played, and I still have an N64 in case I want to play it.
I think, and so do I. Actually, you know, behind these green screens, there's a bunch of retro systems. Yeah. I enjoy it, but I was also a huge WCW fan, so I enjoy
Revenge
and WCW NWO World Tour. Uh-huh. I think because it was the first WWE, it was the first big WWE game. I think, like, yes, you had your arcade games, WrestleFest, and all that, but I think like. It was the first, like, huge, huge WWE game.
Okay. Our audio is better now?
Yeah.
Our audio producer, Tim B, seems to be approving of this.
Yes. Tim B is always a pleasure with calling the PS4 and the Xbox One next gen. Well, it's next gen for me, Tim.
Yes. We're showing how old we are. We're just old white dudes with a podcast who are like, remember Revenge?
It's good times. So I want to talk about this. We got some news that Apple TV has bought the rights to stream a weekly Friday Night Baseball game.
Yes. Friday Night Baseball. Is that a big night for baseball?
On television wise, I never thought it was. Going to the game wise, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, you have a long week at work and, you know, boom, you're right at the stadium.
I've heard that this is like the lowest tier baseball night for TV.
Yeah, I would imagine Saturday would be lower, but I guess Friday, yeah.
Okay. But this is going to be exclusively on Apple TV. Are you an Apple TV subscriber right now?
I am not. That is like the one streaming service I do not have or have a friend that has that I can use their password.
Watching Severance right now? Very good.
I want to watch Ted Lasso. My friends keep telling me Ted Lasso, but yet none of them want to give me their password.
Will you be subscribing to Apple TV to see Friday Night Baseball?
I don't need to, because what I'm going to do what I've done the past couple of years and buy the
and steal it.
Not stealing it. I'm going to buy MLB TV where I can stream all the Phillies out of network.
But you games. Won't get these games. That's MLB TV is out of market games, right?
Yes, but the Phillies will probably be on there maybe once or twice.
Okay. The Phillies are your team.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a Phillies fan. So.
Okay. What does this press release say? Have you read this?
So I can say right here, Apple and Major League Baseball today have announced Friday Night Baseball, a weekly doubleheader with live pre- and post-game that will be available to fans in 8 countries exclusively on Apple TV.
8 countries.
Plus as soon as the regular season begins. In addition to Friday Night Baseball, fans in the U.S. will be able to enjoy MLB Big Inning, a live show featuring highlights and look-ins airing every weeknight during the regular season. Baseball fans in the U.S. and Canada will also have access to the new 24/7 live stream with MLB game replays, news analysis, highlights, game, classic games, and more, as well as a full complement of on-demand programming, including highlights and MLB-themed original content. Fans will be able to watch marquee games on Friday nights, free from local broadcast restrictions across devices where Apple TV Plus can be found, including on the Apple TV app, on iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple TV 4K and HD on tv.apple.com. Now, along with select smart TV gaming consoles and cable setup boxes, now Friday Night Baseball will be available on Apple TV Plus and for a limited time without the need for a subscription. Uh-huh. Very interesting, some of the benefits to having this, because these are some of the benefits that are on the MLB.tv, like the classic games and like highlights and...
There's going to be classic games that are a part of this.
Yeah.
Is that what you just said?
Yes.
I was messing with the audio. So we should be, I don't know, not much it looks like, but maybe a little bit louder now.
And they're going to do a weekly highlight show too.
Would you ever watch an old baseball game? Like an entire game?
No.
No. Would you ever watch an entire old wrestling event?
Yes.
Yeah. Would you ever watch an entire old movie?
Yes.
Yes.
But to be honest with you though, baseball... Because it's a long, drawn-out thing, mm-hmm. watching old game is... I have watched old football and basketball games and enjoyed them.
Okay. It's also coming to Peacock. Isn't that true?
Yeah, so this is from the Wall Street Journal. NBC Universal's Peacock is finalizing a deal with Major League Baseball for exclusive rights to stream games in a new Sunday time slot, according to people familiar with the discussions, as the league looks to increase digital partnerships. The deal with NBC Universal, a unit of Comcast Corp, will involve a package of 18 games, some beginning at 11:30 a.m. and others just after noon, the people said. Yeah, because Sunday Night Baseball currently is owned by ESPN. So I imagine this will be Sunday, like, afternoon or baseball. Because the way they that Major League does it is everybody plays well, and they're done by 7 o'clock. So then you could have one game on Sunday Night Baseball.
Okay. Some more sports. Live sports. Exclusive live sports.
On Peacock.
On Peacock.
And I think we're kind of...
Apple TV.
Yes. Yeah, I would say we're kind of burying the lead. It's a Fang. A Fang is involved now.
That's what we're getting to.
Yeah.
Thursday Night Football coming to Amazon Prime. No basketball yet.
Not yet, no.
No basketball. Basketball is the number two sports property behind the NFL. MLB is number three. After that, it might be UFC, according to Google Trends, if and Google Trends are to be believed.
And would you think EPL over NHL maybe at this point?
It's neck and neck, I think.
Yeah.
The Google Trends are. I tweeted something recently. I don't know if we discussed it on here, but yeah. Used to be WWE. But, you know, it's the economy and COVID and, you know, times are tough and budget cuts and things of that nature. So it's, you know, you can totally understand why WWE might be down. It's not their fault. So
baseball's back. Yeah.
Also baseball is back. Before we get to that, so this does bode well for the notion that what's Nick been telling you every quarter.
There's going to be more and more.
It's only a matter of time. Amazon's already doing it. It's only a matter of time for Apple. Oh, Apple's doing it. It's only a matter of time for Netflix. Is his next prophecy that has to be realized? I don't know about Netflix. We'll see. But Netflix is having some challenges with subscriber growth. Their stock, like a lot of tech stocks, are cratering.
They just had another price increase, too. That right. Just went in effect.
Right. So that bodes well, I think, for WWE. I don't know about AEW. I don't know how their younger brand will fare and their fewer relationships will be able to leverage. It's a great, great corporate buzzword. Will be able to leverage digital these non-traditional players. There's a lot of uncertainty too about this Discovery merger and how is that going to play out. I still think, you know, AEW is going to get a major increase in rights fees. Are they going to get real interest from a streaming player? I don't know. Are they even going to have real discussions with people outside of the Warner Media Discovery space? I don't know. Does Warner Media own a piece of AEW, and does that lessen the possibility that you're going to have multiple bidders for your house, if you will? I don't know. But I do think this reinforces my belief that I think WWE Raw and or SmackDown are going to be not 52 weeks a year on streaming in the next round, late 2024 and forward. But maybe some of those episodes are on streaming. Select episodes are on streaming and traditional TV. I think that would be my guess of where we're headed in the latter part of the 2020s.
Tim B, I see your super chat. Very good question. I think we'll wait a little bit for that, Brandon. Gonna want to get into that.
Yeah, go ahead, since I'm trying to read it now.
Let's go, yeah. All right, so Tim with super chat, can I propose a WrestleNomics exclusive rating stat? Adjusted rating by TV penetration. For instance, identical rating, is actually growth due to less homes.
That actually exists, Timby. What you're referring to there is, I believe, called a cable rating. The ratings that we often talk about, which are the ratings that are published by Showbiz Daily, those the ratings that we look at for the demos, are what are called national ratings, which are different from cable ratings. Which I never see cable ratings. So the national rating for, as it scrolls across the ticker, right, SmackDown did a 0.59 P18-49 national rating this past not last night, but two Fridays ago. So that means that 0.59% of the national 18 to 49 population watched SmackDown. But there are such things as cable ratings. I think Wade Keller sometimes reports cable ratings that tell you what percentage of the cable homes that have access to this network, what percentage of that denominator watched this show. So there, Nielsen is tracking that. Networks and wrestling companies are probably getting that information. They definitely are. They at least have access to that information. I think they look at viewers more. Why? I don't know. But they do. So yeah. But that's a good point. And I guess to do that independently, to just do sort of calculate it, I would have to have a regular. I would have to have data over time of what the relevant networks, how many homes they're in. And it's somewhat easy to get that stuff sort of on an annual basis, but on a monthly basis is harder. But it's a good point to raise that, yeah, as coverage goes down, viewership goes down. But even as coverage has gone down, I believe we would find, I'm virtually certain that we would find that viewership has gone down at a stronger rate than coverage has gone down, because there's just more options, and there's streaming competition, there's gaming competition, there's just more options about what to do and more competition about what to do with your entertainment time. So that would be helpful to know what the cable ratings were, but I don't know that that would tell us the whole story. It's not just about cord cutting. It's also about the variety of things that are competing for your attention and trying to get you addicted. Texting, sleep, TikTok, Netflix, and so forth.
But baseball.
Tell me about the lockout. The lockout has come to an end.
The lockout has come to an end. They have reached an agreement. Baseball will be starting April 7th. My Phillies will be on April 8th as for their home opener against the Oakland Athletics. They've come to an agreement. There was a lot of rule things that are in effect now, including a universal designated hitter.
DH in the National League.
DH in the National
League. That sounds like an abomination.
That is, let's see here.
The Phillies are in the National League, right?
Yes, yep. That is 100, yeah, that's 150 years of history.
Down the drain.
Down the drain.
A disgrace.
No, I'm okay for it.
You're all right with it.
I'm absolutely okay for it.
Why?
I don't want pitchers hitting.
Why?
Because they don't hit good.
So?
I mean, some do, but I don't want a guy hitting below 200.
Whatever happened, Babe Ruth was a pitcher. Why aren't there more Babe Ruths?
Because they're focusing. So this is going to be very down rabbit hole baseball, but I'm a big baseball fan. So the way people develop players nowadays, when they think you have an arm, they know that when you're like 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and then you're taking all these training classes with these former major leaguers, and then you play little league and then high school and maybe the minors or college, and you're just focused on pitching. Back then, there was no like, oh, you have to focus on this one thing. We're going to develop you to be the best you can. But also, with the designated hitter and all that, the game needs more offense, Brandon. The game needs something to excite people. People, there was just another lock, almost a lockout. I mean, it was a lockout, but not almost a strike. People.
And opening day is being pushed back, or is it happening as scheduled now?
It's being pushed back, but okay. Just like, about a week. Mm-hmm. But they need, when baseball went on strike in 94, popularity went down the tubes.
Mm. There was no season.
What brought it back was 1998, Sosa McGuire. Mm-hmm. And everybody loved it.
So everybody should be on steroids.
No, but then the steroid trial happened, and then it went down in popularity.
I had a dream about Sammy Sosa last night for some reason.
That's a very weird dream.
I dreamed he signed a lifetime contract with the Cubs. Is that something that happened? Anyway, the lockout is over with. So interesting to see what kind of bearings we'll have on wrestling's collective bargaining agreement going forward, and how the Wrestlers Association will deal with the various big wrestling companies. So we'll see.
All right, so we're going to.
aren't you looking forward to how the Wrestlers Association is going to bargain collectively for their interests with WNAW?
I Who would, you know, I think what needs to be is Indie Wrestlers Union. Yeah, that needs to start first. I was having this conversation with a wrestling veteran yesterday. It's been in the business for over 20 years, and we've talked about how the pay has not changed since the territories.
let's jump to let's jump to the WWE's two top corporate executives. Their pay has changed. Read us this verbose and vague SEC filing that dropped into my email on Friday. Of course, this comes out on Friday. I mean, this isn't huge news, but this is one of those things that I decode and then tweet about, and then I'm walking around all evening being like, oh yeah, you're just trying to make everybody look bad, right? Yeah, it's not my fault that these things are disclosed, and we might as well understand them. And it's interesting that these kinds of things are disclosed for public companies, but of course they're not. Who knows what's happening in private companies such as AEW? Although supposedly Tony Khan does not take a salary, I believe he has said. But anyway.
Yep. So item 502, departure of directors or certain officers, election of directors, appointment of certain officers, compensatory arrangements for certain officers. So in connection with its annual review of executive compensation, the company's Compensation and Human Capital Committee approved certain changes with the approval of all independent directors in the case of Mr. McMahon's compensation, as described below. The salary of Mr. Vincent McMahon, our chairman and chief executive officer, was set an annual rate of $2 million for a calendar of 2022. His target management incentive plan bonus was set at 250% of his salary, and his grant of performance stock units has a targeted value of $11 million. The salary of Mr. Nick Khan, our president and chief revenue officer, was set at an annual rate of $1.2 million for calendar 2022. His target management incentive plan bonus was set at 158% of the salary, and his grant to performance stocks unit has a targeted value of $3.575 million. In addition, the second tranche of his sign-up equity grant to be made in September 2022, as described in our prior filings, has increased by $7.5 million. The foregoing incentive foregoing management incentive plan bonuses and performance stock units are governed by the terms in our 2000.
Right, you don't need to read the rest of that. This is all, who knows? So I think it's pretty clear. What summarize that for us in plain English?
They got raises.
What happened though exactly?
So, they got raises with the plan bonus, which was the 250% of that $2 million salary for Vince McMahon and 158% of the 1.2 for Nick Cobb.
So here's what I understand. Here's what I don't understand. The salary of Vince was set to an annual rate of $2 million. That's going to be for the calendar year of 2022 this year. His salary for 2021 was disclosed in the proxy statement. What's a proxy statement? A proxy statement is something that comes out every year around this time, around the spring. It hasn't come out yet for 2021. It will come out probably within the next 30 days or so, I would expect it. Maybe it came out in early April last year, which was later than I had, it's later than it has come out in previous years. The proxy statement will disclose a lot of information, including what the top five most compensated executives. It will disclose all the varieties of their compensation, except for dividends, of course, but you can do the math. So in the most recent proxy statement, W disclosed what Vince's salary was going to be for last year, for 2021. It was $1.4 million. So he's getting an increase from $1.4 million to $2 million. It's been the case, by the way, that Vince has had among the lower salaries among the top five executives. So it's not like he's paying himself this huge salary. Now, when you're a big deal executive like these two are, salary is not your only form of compensation. You get compensated stock, you get compensated this management incentive plan bonus. So here's the, I don't understand what these sentences mean. For calendar year 2022, his target, that's Vince's target management incentive plan bonus, was set at 250% of his salary, and his grant of PSUs, performance stock units, has a target value of $11 million. I guess that means that if the board determines that he's worthy of the maximum bonus possible, that he will get 250% of his salary, which would be could do the math there, which would be what, $5 million? And his grant of performance stock units has a set target value of 11. So I guess he's going to get an additional 11 million in stock units. I'm not totally clear on what that means, to be totally honest. But he's definitely getting an increase in his salary of about $600,000 for this year. Nick Khan. Now, by the way, let's look before we're done talking about Vince. Vince has 28.7 million shares of W stock. He is by far the biggest W shareholder. He holds about a third of the stock because he has preferred class shares. Because he's the founder, he gets all of his stock is worth 10 times the voting, not the monetary value, but 10 times the voting power of everybody else's stock. And he can't transfer this to anybody except for his immediate family members. So he's the he controls the company. He owns a slight minority of the stock. He owns about a third of the stock. Anyway, he owns 28.7 million shares. You, as a W shareholder, Gullo, you're well aware that W pays a dividend.
I mean, I'm no longer a W shareholder.
Well, as a form, excuse me. That's why I should have said. Yes. What is W's quarterly dividend? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
It's 12 cents. 12 cents per quarter. So for every share that you hold, you get 12 cents per quarter. So Vince, holding nearly 29 million shares, gets 12 cents for each one of those shares per quarter. And so that means that he gets just under $14 million a year just from dividends, based on the math. So, you know, Vince is getting multiple million, you know, over a dozen million dollars a year just because of his dividends. But anyway, Nick Khan, he has an annual salary of $1.2 million, which I don't think is different from what it was disclosed at last year. I mean, last year, we'll find out what he made this year. But in 2020, his salary was something like $500,000. I believe under 600,000 in 2020, because he was only there for part of the year. He started in August of 2020. So his compensation was naturally prorated for the time that he was.
Do you think that would include like a signing bonus and all that?
Getting to that. Nick Khan got a very lucrative employment agreement sign-on bonus, which I've linked to on Twitter. I believe he's got something like a $5 million sign-on bonus. That might not be exactly correct, but he's got a multiple million-dollar sign-on bonus, which to keep all of the money that he'll get because of his sign-on bonus, he has to work for WB for 5 years. Anyway, tranche number two for Nick Khan is coming up, where he's going to get some of this compensation that he has been that he has agreed to receive based on his sign-on agreement, his employment agreement. That's coming up September 2022. And what this disclosure says, the second tranche of his sign-on equity grant, which is stock, it sounds like, equity, to be made September 2022, as described in our prior filings, has been increased by $7.5 million. I thought it said 7 when I looked at this last, so I might have this slightly off on Twitter. $7.5 million. So it was, if you go to my Twitter, it was, I believe, $9 million. It was disclosed as $9 million in prior filings. You can see that in the proxy statement. You can see that in his employment agreement, which was disclosed around the time that he started working for WB. The second tranche is worth $9 million. So now this is worth 9 plus 7.5, which would be $16.5 million in stock, apparently. So that's what he'll be receiving this September. Pretty sweet deal for Nick Khan. This is, by the way, so who decided to do this? Who decided to do this? Do you have an impression of who makes this decision? Does Vince just decide to pay himself more because he's, by God, he's a great man and Nick is his new son?
Well, I think it's the board, the chairman of the board.
Right. But who's on the board?
Vince McMahon is on the board.
Well, there's there's committees. It's sort of like the Senate, right? There's all these committees that you know, not everybody's on the Foreign Relations Committee. Not everybody, and I'm talking about the Senate here, not the board. But there's board directors, which I believe is 12 members. Vince, Stephanie, Paul Levesque, Nick Khan. Those are the non-independent directors, but then there's a number of independent directors, including Eric Nardini, who's the CEO of Barstool Sports, Alan Wexler, Manjit Singh. Anyway, most of the members of the board of directors are not full-time W employees. They do this on a part-time basis for, you know, they, and they're compensated in stock so that their interests are aligned, but they're supposed to be looking after the interests of the shareholders so that shareholders have somebody, you know, who's not just, you know, looking after the executive's interests. Anyway, neither Nick nor Vince are members of the compensatory committee, according to W's corporate website. It's all independent directors. So the independent directors think that Vince and Nick are great, is what I read from this. So there's that.
Do you need something from the proxy statement? I know you're bringing that up earlier.
How many pages is the proxy statement? No.
We're fine. 48.
Yeah, we're fine. We're fine. Look for the proxy statement to come out soon. That will be, that's always a big deal. It'll have Shane McMahon's compensation disclosed in it too, because he's a family member. We have to disclose his compensation, even though he's not a corporate, Shane is not a corporate executive. Never was. I know he just sent home. He wasn't sent home from being a corporate executive. He hasn't been a corporate executive for WB since late 2009. He may have worked in some sort of producer role, but he was not an employee as far as I know. But his performer pay will be disclosed. We always get Triple H's performer pay disclosed as well. It will be interesting to see. I mean, maybe there'll be some information there about Christina Salen and the extent to which that she was compensated. I mean, she was there for 11 months out of the year, 10 or 11 months. I don't know that we'll get, like, you know.
Did we get her severance number or no?
Yeah. There was her severance agreement was disclosed.
Yeah, that's right.
What will be interesting to see is, like, is Paul Levesque still among the top five? I would imagine maybe, you know, Kevin Dunn is sometimes in there or out of there. Sometimes Stephanie's in there or out of there. I doubt we'll get, like, a glaring impression of, like, if Paul Levesque has fallen from power, it'll be reflected in the proxy statement. But it'll be interesting to see what his compensation is set at for 2022, if he's among the top five. But we'll see. Moving on.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, yeah, we're going to move on. And, you know, you said no Shane. Speaking of no Shane, that was what Tony Khan said a couple weeks ago when he did his announcement that Ring of Honor was bought and purchased by him.
We have a clip here. We'll see. Now's the moment of truth to see if you'll actually hear this. So here's Tony Khan from the post-revolution media scrum, where he's making it clear that he will be the booker of Ring of Honor.
One thing I'll tell you that I do plan to do, because I think I've been asked that a lot, and you ask me what I'm going to do with it, I'm going to be the booker. And there's a reason for that. Because I will be bringing in young wrestlers, and they have a lot of young wrestlers. And I think we're very successful here. We're doing very well here. And I plan to continue doing very well with it and bringing in wrestlers that could work in Ring of Honor or AEW potentially. And I think you've seen that for continuity's sake, like when you bring people in other wrestling companies that have had, say, multiple promotions under one corporate structure, one person, I don't think it's conducive to have people coming into an environment, say somebody were to come here and from there, and the whole thing that's been going on with them, you know, I might not be behind it. You know what I mean? And so I think, you know, it's Revolution, and I want to talk about, like, Revolution and also Ring of Honor. It's a big week with that happening, and I want to respect, again, the process that's happening right now, because it's a complicated transfer, and we're finishing up everything. But, again, like, that's, to be honest, that's one of the reasons that I think, okay, I'm holding, so...
I know you want to...
Okay, here's what I want to say. Here's what I want to say because it's a room full of wrestling fans, right? Okay. What NXT do you guys think is better, the original or 2.0?
Original, obviously.
Okay. Okay. Now, which one do you think is more conducive with Vince McMahon's vision of pro wrestling?
Original. The second one.
Okay. Now, for better or for worse, if they're not going to change what they're doing with the main stuff, isn't that maybe more, there's a reason that it's maybe a more efficient process to do that? Because at least then you're calling up people you know what they're doing, and like it's not like you're calling up people you don't believe in to do nothing. So like, does that make sense?
So there's that. So I think he's making it pretty clear that he's going to book Ring of Honor because you can look at the lesson of Black and Gold NXT and how people were called up from Black and Gold NXT to the main roster, and Vince didn't like them and didn't use talent, didn't heavily push talent that was heavily pushed in NXT. And maybe that'll be different now. And I think, as we've discussed here, I mean, if Vince is going to be Vince, then I guess you might as well have an NXT that loves big, tall people who are athletes, collegiate athletes and things like that. What I also read from that comment is that Ring of Honor is probably not going to be a occasional brand that runs events. It's probably going to be some kind of regular. It's going to be a brand that's used regularly to run events, is what I'm reading from that. That's his intent right now. That it's probably going to be, you know, the developmental or the secondary brand, the NXT to AEW's main roster. And he's going to book it for those reasons, so that there isn't a conflicting vision of talent or creative in the flow from the secondary to the primary, which makes sense. How does this man have the bandwidth to do another company, though?
Because I think he's still technically the GM of the football club.
Right. At Fulham.
And he has that analytics company, right? Doesn't he have a sports analytics company?
Right.
Yeah, and he's also involved in the Jaguars office.
Right.
I think it's in an analytics perspective. Yeah, this guy already has like 5 jobs.
Yes. So, well, another one. I remember asking when AEW was about to start. Like, this is somebody who's already involved in 2 major sports franchises. Is he going to have time to run AEW? Oh yeah, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. let's add more to this plate here. We'll see. I mean, maybe if it's just a matter of taking Dark Elevation rather than having a Dark and a Dark Elevation or something like that and rebranding it Ring of Honor, that won't be a big deal. I mean, it's not adding anything, in fact, because a Dark Elevation already exists. But we'll see.
I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions. There also hasn't, I mean, I've been keeping in touch, and last time I checked, there has not been any official press release from Sinclair of the sale, right?
There has. On the Ring of Honor website, there is.
On the Ring of Honor website, okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, because I know that didn't come out right away. I know Lavi was kind of pointing that out, but so there is now. Okay, I haven't checked up on it in a few days, so.
I'm pretty sure there's a statement on the Ring of Honor website.
Okay.
You know, that's similar to the press release that AEW put out, but, you know, it's got quotes, I believe, from Joe Koff and Tony Khan, but yeah. Sinclair, have we talked about this? Sinclair is a publicly traded company. Are we going to find out what the value of this deal was? Are we going to find any details about what the transaction was? I mean, I defer to Lavi on that, but because he's looked at Sinclair filings more closely than I have, but I think probably not would be my I would not expect any explicit statement in Sinclair filings that like we got X number of dollars for this.
It would be like other compensation. Then you would have to figure out.
I think it's a matter of, is it material? And what's material for a publicly traded company is different for every company. It's been told to me that what's materiality, you know it when you see it.
They are a media company, though, and they're technically selling a media library.
But it's about the value of it, though. Okay. Like, how much did they sell it for?
Yeah.
Probably several million dollars, but is that big enough on the scale of Sinclair to disclose it? I don't know. We'll see. Okay.
All right, yeah. Move on to some Google web search data for Japan.
Mm-hmm. Stardom's going through the roof here still. This is just looking at Google going all the way back to 2004. Not every company conceivable here, but I think these are the top ones across this timeline. New Japan, of course, is well above the others. And in fact, it's interesting to call out that, you know, New Japan hasn't declined. I think New Japan has really diminished in popularity globally and in the United States, right? It's great for them that they're back on Access. Have you been following the Access New Japan TV ratings?
You
get sent directly to your inbox because you're a patron of WrestleNomics?
I have not looked at them yet.
He's not reading the ratings.
I get alerts all day long because you're so on top of stuff.
All day long. It's only like really twice a day because I initially put it up there and then I will update it because I get further information.
How have they been performing?
So we're 2 weeks into new content after doing a month of old content. The new content is not doing better than the old content. And it's doing substantially lower, as you would expect, than Impact. Impact is on from 8 to 10. They're on from 10 to 11. But these are not impressive ratings. For all we know, New Japan could be the number two show on Access TV. But
yeah, but you want to talk about a lead-in. Like, Impact is booking a lot of New Japan stars in main angles right now. You have Jay White as a main fixture in Impact and the Bullet Club and all that, and yet they're still not be able to get a little bit of a better bump up.
And like, who knows what the expectation is? I mean, Access might be perfectly happy with the numbers that they're doing, but these are not. I would have expected the new content to do better than the old content, but it's not. And there's really not that much buzz around New Japan these days. And I think that we're still in this setting where, you know, there aren't really crowds that do anything but clap. I think still. Honestly, I haven't been watching. I did realize, though, after thinking about this earlier this week, that I think I'm still a New Japan World subscriber. And, of course, you've got people who are among the hardcores. They don't need to watch Access TV. That's only in half of the cable homes. If you're even a cable home, you're only in half of them. They can watch it through New Japan World live or shortly thereafter. And they got English commentary there, too. But anyway, New Japan in Japan, Google Trends would tell you that they haven't diminished in popularity here. They're pretty much even. There's this big dip for the pandemic that you can see right here. But then it really returns back to the level that they left off at. And it's been this great strong march from about 2016 forward. And they're flat from the period of, you know, 2018 or so.
Are they back to just full capacity, by the way?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm sure, you know, I'm just not following close enough to say. W's diminished in web search, and that's probably, I mean, not all of this, but they've lost their TV in Japan. I think they're still probably on Samurai TV or something, but they probably have that this week in W on there. But I believe DAZN was their most recent distributor in Japan.
Do you think some of this had to do with, you know, Nakamura not being push in a high role and then Asuka being pretty much off TV?
Nakamura's having a great time. Will you leave Nakamura alone? He's surfing. He's having the time of his life.
Hanging out with Rick Boogs.
Yeah, he's having a great time.
They got a WrestleMania match, but Lashley doesn't.
Yeah. But anyway, Stardom continues to be on the march here. I tweeted this chart. Stardom retweeted it from both their English and their Japanese language accounts. They must have loved this. It's hard to analyze the Japanese market right now because there's still no real loose international travel. There's still, as far as I know, restrictions on events. So, but it's really interesting to see Stardom grow here. Now, YouTube.
Yeah, so we'll get into YouTube data for this past week here.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to display this, but this is an old chart that we have up on the screen here right now. Let's see if I can change this so that we look at. Is this what we're looking at here? Google? Maybe it's this. Is that Excel? I'm not real sure. What does that say? Voice meter. Okay. Well, anyway, I'll just read to you what it is. I apologize for this mess that we have here today. The most watched YouTube video of any program, anything that's a highlight of a program. And in fact, let's make sure, are there anything that's a non-weekly show highlight? There is. This was within the last week, I guess it was. Yeah, we're still within a week of the MSG angle with Reigns and Lesnar that has an enormous 5.3 million video views as of this morning. 5.3.
Yeah, that's crazy.
2.5 million within 24 hours. I heard that this was put over on SmackDown as the most watched Instagram clip ever, for whatever that's worth. But that angle doing big numbers on YouTube, for what it's worth. I mean, in terms of direct revenue, that means if it generates probably a few thousand dollars for WWE. The number two clip, I mean, and that's not from the weekly TV show, which is sometimes how I look at these things. The number two clip is not a WWE clip, but an AEW clip with the title, "It's Official, Jeff Hardy is All Elite," which is the clip of his debut in AEW this past week, with 2.2 million views as of this morning, 1.57 of those within the first 24 hours. So there's that. At number four, we've got a clip that is of Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, to confront Kevin Owens at the KO show. That's the number three clip. The number four clip is an old match of Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair versus the Riot Squad from April 2009. But after that, it's the Alpha Academy three-way tag match where RK-Bro win the tag titles. That is the top Raw highlight, and that also did well in the quarter hours. The culmination of that did.
Look at all these legacy stars that are involved in these top videos, though. Brock Lesnar, Jeff Hardy, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. You know, you can make an argument Ronda Rousey, just UFC popularity.
You're so Randy Orton. You have to just rag on WWE every chance you get.
I'm just saying. I'm not ragging on WWE at all. I'm just saying a lot of legacy stars on these YouTube.
Somebody pointed out, somewhere on Twitter, that every WrestleMania main event, and I'm talking about the last match, since Rock came back to wrestle Cena the first time, every WrestleMania main event has had at least one part-timer in it. Since, what is that, 2012?
Yeah, that was yes.
So it's been what? Rock and Cena. What's after Rock and Cena? Batista, Danielson, and Orton.
Yes, Batista, Danielson, and Orton.
That's 30. And then it's Brock and Reigns. And then it's Reigns and Undertaker. No, I'm sorry. It's Triple H and Reigns. And then 33 is that Reigns and Undertaker?
So this one only goes up to 35, but...
Yeah, that's Reigns and Undertaker.
Lesnar Reigns for 34.
34 is Lesnar Reigns again.
Lynn Charlotte Rousey. Rousey's a part-timer.
Rousey with the first women's main event.
For 35. 36 was
Drew
and Brock. Yep. 37.
No fans.
Was so
Edge and Danielson and Reigns.
Yes, that was one of the nights. Because the other night was Bianca and
Sasha. But that was night one.
Yes.
And Vince.
We're counting night two.
Vince puts on last what he thinks is the most important. And this year it'll be Brock and Reigns for the third time. A WrestleMania main event.
And I was there in New Orleans. And the crowd itself was not interested.
Oh, I know.
They were chanting Rusev Day.
Yeah.
Loudly.
They turned on that match.
Yeah, there was beach balls flying through.
Right.
I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. And you'd think you wouldn't just remember a WrestleMania main event, but that would be very memorable. But, like, yeah, it's a... I remember after watching that night being like, that's this WrestleMania brand, I don't know. But, you know, they've got over 100,000 tickets out for WrestleMania night one and night two. I don't think WrestleTickets is updated since the 3rd of March. But we'll see. Steve Austin probably not having a match now, it looks like. So we'll see whether that even matters to ticket sales. Vince McMahon not being advertised for a match, it looks like. Maybe he'll have some involvement with the Pat McAfee thing.
Since we kind of going a lot less than we normally do, I do want someone to bring up as far as WrestleMania. We saw this week that they officially said they're not doing Access, but they're doing Superstore. And this is why. Because I remember at Access, I've never been to a WWE Access, right? But I've been to WrestleCon. I actually worked a WrestleCon table, right? So I remember throughout the day, these poor people at WrestleCon, they're having names just being pulled away, like in the middle of Shawn Michaels' autograph signing. He's got to go because WWE needs him for Access impromptu. And they would do this throughout the weekend to WrestleCon. And I found it interesting that, you know.
So Shawn Michaels was at WrestleCon.
And then WWE pulled him away. Same thing for Flair and others.
Huh. Yeah. I didn't know Shawn Michaels was doing WrestleCon.
A couple years ago, he did, really? Yeah. Okay. He's I don't think he's doing it this year.
What was he just like doing autographs?
Yeah, autographs. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Just the convention itself. I'm interested in it because it's WWE's fan festival. They always talk about this is the, you know, this is where all the fans in the world, the WWE universe, come together, and they're not putting on this Access fan festival. They're doing Superstore Access, which is just really, it's going to be a big store, which they're doing some photo opportunities. But then there was that thing they went out to a bunch of people asking for volunteers where you get.
Was that real?
Yeah.
It's been disputed whether or not that's real.
I believe that is real.
Or that's just something made up by W haters like you. You sent me a screenshot, and I was like, send me the email. And you were like, I can't.
Because I didn't get the email.
Yes. It was a screenshot that was going around.
I think it was a t-shirt, a hat, and you get in a
raffle. But this is something that they've done before. This yes. wouldn't be the... If that's real, well, it's not the first year they would have done that.
David Bixenspan brought up, I think yesterday or this morning, because I was looking at his Twitter, about... In other conventions like Comic-Con in San Diego, they will have volunteers as well. But those volunteers get hotel rooms, they get meal stipends. Like, there's other benefits. Here's a shirt and a hat.
I mean, yeah. It's whatever. I don't know.
But yeah, so just back to what I was talking about was fan service. They're not doing that fan festival where they would have live matches too throughout.
Why do you think they're not doing it? Why would you not do it?
I mean, I don't know if they're just kind of they don't think they're going to get the international audience that kind of eats that stuff up, that, you know, because they don't get to experience that a lot. You know, there's not a lot of international events. You don't get a chance to get all these photo opportunities and all this merchandise and see all this cool Hall of Fame stuff and stuff in the warehouse and then see live matches from NXT wrestlers and stuff like that they've done the years past. Maybe they just don't think they don't have the audience for it with the international base.
Right. And that's got to be affecting WrestleMania ticket sales.
I think it's affecting the Hall of Fame. Sure. The Hall of Fame's part of SmackDown,
which is not sold out yet.
And do we have a lot of info on this NXT event, or if it's even really happening?
Yeah, it's happening. Tickets went on sale.
Okay, yeah, I just have not heard any buzz on the internet about it at all.
Stand and deliver.
Yeah,
Dolph Ziggler's the champ.
Yeah.
But that's happening Saturday morning. Tickets are on sale now. Get your tickets. You're going to be there.
No, I'm not.
You're going to be in Dallas.
Yes, I'll be in Dallas.
I mean, you're not going to go to Stand and Deliver?
No, I have a show at 2 o'clock.
Oh, you're running competition against Stand and Deliver. Yeah, okay, yes. I see how it works now. Yeah, it's... No international travel, so we'll see. Anything else?
Again, I want to touch on that. I think that's all I could really think of. This... Marilyn tweeted about, like, there's, I guess they're doing a launch party thing for this pro wrestling TV in this pro wrestling TV in Dallas during WrestleMania week, which I can't tell if it's actually just owned by Control Your Narrative or if it's its own entity.
Yes.
All right. See, I'll do my plugs here. You can check me, Chris Gillow, on, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Rediscovering Indies, my other podcast. That's going to be that's a monthly podcast about independent wrestling history. Next few months, we're going to be doing a deep dive on Burr Prentice. You can check out part one out now on all your major podcast streaming services. And for myself, it was a busy weekend this past weekend. I did comedy on Friday. I was ring announcing Excite Wrestling on Saturday.
Amazing.
But next couple of weeks, I'm kind of taking off. It's my wife's birthday's coming up and other things. And then I'm going to be in Dallas. So, and by the way, in Dallas, there's three chances you could see me so far. Friday night, I will be at Zoa Live. And that's going to be at the Cover All Bases Baseball Center in Arlington. That's going to be Friday, April 1st at 6 p.m. And then Saturday, two chances to catch me. I'll be at the Texas Roughhouse Show at 2 o'clock. And that is at Turning Point Brewery in Bedford, Texas. And then I will be at Fort Worth at 7:30 for the This Is Manly Show. And that is... at Tulips.
What is the This Is Manly Show?
So it's, from what I gather, it's so the guy that's running it, he does like a strongman gimmick, and there's a lot of like guys that have gimmicks with their beards and stuff like that. So it's interesting.
Great. Yeah, I guess that's it. I guess we can end this show now. We can mercifully end this contraption of WrestleNomics Radio. We will be back in our normal situation next week, remote. And everything will be back to normal. I realized halfway through this that I was not even recording this, but luckily we're streaming it, so I'll get the audio one way or another.
Do plugs for the WrestleNomics?
What a program this has been. Press like, mercifully, hit subscribe. There's always the WrestleNomics Patreon. As we get feedback into our ears here, there's always a WrestleNomics Patreon that you can sign up to, patreon.com/WrestleNomics for $5 a month. You get all my TV ratings reports. We thank, as always, our distribution partner, Post Wrestling. You can get merchandise at store.postwrestling.com. Highly recommend. You can go to the WrestleNomics YouTube channel if you're not already on it right now. Every Thursday, I do the live TV ratings talk. This past week, I had on MJ from NJ to talk about his personal experience at AEW Revolution in Orlando. So I think that's all for now, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
We'll talk to you next time.